Just because I'm a winemaker doesn't mean I have to be a critic all the time.
Oh, this is fun and it's beautiful. You do it because you love it. And if you don't love it unconditionally and stupidly and you're not crazy passionate about it, you won't last.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar and I'm thinking, great.
Turning sugar into alcohol is not really rocket science.
You think your car depreciates quickly. Don't hold a candle to what barrels do.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
I mean, in my youth, my first couple of vintages, the crazy part was being lucky we're alive still.
The really cool thing about wine is it swims in the stream of history and civilization and everything else.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 226. This week we feature Colleen Sepps Williams of Storybook Mountain Vineyards in Napa Valley.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
While Cab may be king in Napa Valley, Zinfandel rules at Storybook Mountain Vineyards in Calistoga. Several types of Zinfandel, in fact, including a rosé. Storybook Mountain is a family operation, and Colleen works alongside her winemaker dad. We met Colleen back in February during a crazy chilly day of heavy rain that even included some hail. Luckily, the vines were sleeping. We're here with Colleen Sepps Williams of Storybook Mountain Vineyards, and that is here, part of the Calistoga AVA. And Colleen is the associate winemaker as well as second generation family member, which is pretty cool. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could be here. You know, this idea of being second generation, there's a little bit of responsibility that falls on your shoulders. Did you find that daunting at all, especially seeing how you kind of grew up in the business?
Sometimes, you know, to try and keep up with my father is a little hard. You know, he'll be 80 years old this year and he's still actively involved in everything we do, from being the only tractor driver we've ever had to being on the road right now and selling the wine.
So he's on the road at 80?
He is on the road, yes. So he's been 2 weeks on the road. It's amazing. It's wonderful to see, you know, what my parents have done from scratch, literally, when we went there. No vines, no winery, you know, to just pick it up from scratch and what they've accomplished. For me, is daunting and also fantastic, but it is, you know, like I said, almost impossible to keep up with my father, who's amazing. So it's been great.
And you said 41 years you guys have been
41
here.
Years, yes.
That's a long time. You were really pioneers.
Yes, absolutely. Pioneers, one of the first here in the Valley and certainly, you know, one of the first growings in. So
what brought your parents here?
A love of wine. My father, you know, when he was in college and he went to Berkeley, he spent summers working as a wine steward at the Awani Hotel in Yosemite Valley and spent all of his time off in the Napa Valley loving wine, collecting wine, and dreaming about it. And, you know, we left LA in 76, and he was a tenured professor, which is another just crazy thing for me to realize that, you know, with four kids, walked away from tenure to go wing it and try something new that he loved. So, and the passion is clearly still there. So.
And you guys were here when things started happening too. I mean, internationally anyway.
Yes, yes.
That had to be pretty exciting.
It was very exciting, you know. So, I mean, I think it took a long time for us to realize, you know, that. But yeah, you know, we were certainly on the edge of Napa Valley being discovered.
And growing up in the wine business like you did, I mean, was that... did you feel that was something you wanted to get into?
It was absolutely not something I wanted to get into. So I actually left for college, and my intention was to go to law school. And I got a degree in sociology, so not in wine at all. And after I graduated, decided to take a year off, come home, do this for a year only, and that was 26 years ago. And there's a point where you can start appreciating, you know, what we do and living in the Napa Valley. When you grow up here, you don't necessarily, you know, appreciate what we have in Calistoga or in the Napa Valley. And suddenly I was saying, so I could drink wine for a living and live in the Napa Valley? Maybe I could do that.
It's not a bad thing to have not to do a for a living. Thing. No,
exactly. No,
I admire that. Yeah. Obviously, living here, you've seen a lot of change in the Valley over the years.
A lot of change.
Not just from wineries, but in both progress and in terms of popularity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have any difficulty struggling with that?
No, I think, I mean, it's been pretty progressively growing, you know, so not any giant changes all at once. So that's been kind of nice. And especially at this end of the valley, you know, it's been pretty slow moving. I think we are, you know, really just being discovered. I mean, there's been, you know, maybe two or three major articles on Calistoga recently that, you know, where to go in the Napa Valley, go to Calistoga. So it's a fun time to be here, but it's been pretty progressively happening. So it hasn't been too shocking. The traffic is shocking.
Sure. Yeah. So traffic in the entire valley is shocking. Yeah, that's even in my short period of time coming out here. And the thing about Calistoga for me is when you get up to this part of the valley, it's much more narrow up here. And it's completely different in terms of the layout. You have the Palisades, which are so stunning over here. And you have, you know, the main street through Calistoga, which is just charming like hell. It's great.
Yes, yes, exactly. You know, and it's just, it's a one street town for the most part. And, you know, you can still blink and miss our whole town. But if you really get into it and just spend some time walking around in town, there's just so much to discover. I mean, now we have so many tasting rooms alone in town and the restaurants, and it's just fun. It's a really fun little town. And I, you know, as a kid, did not appreciate a town this size. But I'll tell you, just, this is kind of funny, but just when my kids, when the Harry Potter books first started coming out and the second book, and they just had to have it. And I went to bookstores in Santa Rosa, and they basically laughed me out of, and we came back into town. I said, we'll try one more, guys. Okay. Went to Calistoga bookstore, and there were three copies sitting on the shelf. And I said, I love my little town. So, you know, it's just little things like that. And we all know each other. We know who owns the stores. You know, so many people have grown up here and stayed here and run this town. It's fantastic.
It's not about the glamour. It's about the small town feel here.
Absolutely. I think that's a completely different thing that we have in Calistoga than what is, you know, making this valley grow so much, is that so many of the people that came to Calistoga came to be part of the, you know, surroundings and to be the farmers and to really do what we do here, rather than to just get the prestige of, you know, having your name on a winery and, you know, really not, you know, coming in for a vacation, but not really being here and living here. And so much of Calistoga is different than that.
And you said name on the label, and which you don't have your name on the label. How did the name come about?
So the Storybook Mountain, originally the first vineyard that was planted at our spot was in 1800s, in 1883, and it was originally started by two brothers who happened to be Grimms. And so,
really?
Yes, and so they had the caves dug, which we have, so we have 130-year-old caves, and they had named their winery the Grimm Wine Vaults, which when my parents were doing all the research about the property, decided we did not want to rename it the Grimm Wine Vaults, but they did want to bring that history into what we were doing.
Sure.
So, and my mother, who is German, said, let's play on the Brothers Grimm, named it Storybook, and then our logo is the Fox and the Grapes, which is from Aesop's Fables. So
sure.
It just ties in with the storybook theme.
That's a great story.
Yes.
but it would be bad to have a cave called Grimm. It would definitely be just the opposite direction.
Yeah, it doesn't draw a whole lot of people,
visit. But, let's not go see
Halloween,
the Grimm.
It would be great.
Yeah. I guess you could use that. Rename it for one day, the Grimm Winery.
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's too weird. I'm not even going to go down that street. You're right when you talk about the idea. I've talked to so many winemakers who grew up in Napa and Sonoma, places like that, who don't appreciate what they have. I guess that's just very typical, but it's different when you're talking about wine. You know, being a farmer is being a farmer, but when it comes to wine farming, there is something different about that.
Well, certainly part of it is the fun of the product that you get on the other side,
right?
It's not the same as farming corn, but you know, it's still a family business, and you know, I'm not sure that most kids do appreciate that. You hear of a lot of wineries that can't find a second generation to take over, and I find that very sad. But you know, if the kids can maybe go out and then find their way back to it, you know, it's a fantastic business. There's really nothing to complain about. You know, I had folks in the winery yesterday asking me, what's the hardest part? I don't know. You know, we all work really hard, and there are hard parts of the year, but you know that those last a very short time, and you'll come out the other side, like harvest, you know, come out the other side, have a glass of wine, and it's all good.
Well, then when you're looking towards, yeah, what you're developing at the end, that's pretty exciting.
Right, exactly. And that it's different every, I think that's one of the things that brought me back into it, was really when I could start appreciating the fact that our wine is different from our wine every year, but it's also never going to be the same as anybody else's, that everything that we do is distinct. And it's fascinating. You know, when you really get into the art part of it and how you can make these different, you know, just a little change over here or over there completely changes the wine. So it's exciting.
It doesn't take much. And
it does not.
So your role as associate winemaker, yeah. Where does that put you? And is that something you're...
Puts me second. No, my father is still the winemaker.
I was kind of wondering about that.
So he really, you know, has the end say in everything that we do. But when it comes time to do all the blending, do the tasting, do, you know, when we discuss what barrels to purchase, we do that together. So my mother did that for years. She's officially retired now, decided she didn't want to come to the office every day anymore. But so my father and I do it completely together all the time.
That's a great thing, just for family to be together working.
Absolutely.
To do that, especially at
I think
that age.
He was very excited that when I'm one of four kids, I'm the only one who did come home. And
really?
I think he's very excited. And my parents never pushed us to be in the business. I think part of that comes from the fact that it was a second career. You know, my father, like I said, was a tenured professor. So it was completely, you know, just his passion that brought him to it. And I think that was what he was waiting for one of us to find. So I think he's super excited that one of us did.
Well, it's pretty exciting to be able to work in a winery. Certainly, yes, lots of hard work. This is going to be the dumb question of the day. What is it you like to drink?
Oh, my God, what don't I like to drink? no, I mean, I really do love Zin, and that is what we have focused on all of our time. But when it comes to drinking wines outside of our winery, you know, certainly around here, being from Napa Valley, you know, it's going to be mostly cab-based and cab-based blends. But I do also love Pinot Noir, which, of course, I could grow, but it would not be a good idea for us to grow where we are. So it's just becoming that understanding that, you know, what grows in other places, and that we shouldn't try to grow something that isn't going to be best where we are. So I love to drink Pinots, but I'm not going to ever make that. So.
Well, and the thing is, right, you don't want to force the land to do something it's
exactly.
not going to cooperate with.
Which is what my parents did from the very beginning, was how did we even come upon growing 100% Zinfandel? Was not that my parents came here saying, we love Zinfandel, let's go find a place to grow it. It was they had found the property, decided this is where we have to be. Now let's research the soil, the microclimate, the hillside, and find that one varietal that's going to grow best here. And everything said Zin. And so that's what we did. People thought we were crazy because how much Zinfandel has grown in the Napa Valley? Not much.
Not much.
It's about 3.5% of the grapes produced in Napa Valley are Zinfandel.
I think the phrase that somebody accusing a winemaker of potentially being crazy has probably been used a lot around
yes,
here.
Yes, right. Sure.
And a lot of those crazy people have proved people that they're wrong. They're not, because they were the ones who were willing to take chances that may not have been considered.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Proper. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. I mean, part of it was, you know, hillside, which nobody thinks twice about a hillside vineyard now.
Yeah.
But when we started, you know, the hills were not completely developed yet. And so, you know, people looked at it and said, why would you want that? It's so much more labor intensive and it's harder to work. And yes, it is. But it grows fantastic grapes. And, you know, we've loved it since we started it.
And you got to have fantastic grapes.
We do have fantastic grapes.
It's nice to be in the Napa Valley, too. We're Cab is King. We're making great Zinfandel.
Sure.
Because that makes your own statement of who you are.
Absolutely.
You know, we're just now talking about the water and the rain. As we do this interview, it's raining outside. It was pouring outside. And I'm curious as to how you think that's going to affect 2017. Gosh, it's hard to think of even being 17 already.
Right.
But what are your thoughts about that?
Because we are 100% hillside vineyard, and we really have clay soil. So we are not having erosion problems. Certainly the vines are all dormant right now. So the amount of water right now is not hurting us. What's going to actually be a good thing is when the sun comes out, that the soil will start to dry slowly. And so our soil retains water very, very well. So that will really encourage a lot of root development. So, you know, potentially this is a fantastic year, but anything can change on a dime, right? Right up until the day you pick those grapes. So
we're not in harvest, that's for sure.
That's right.
Does clay tend to retain more water than very typical loamy soils?
Not that I'm a soil expert, but from what I understand, yes. You know, ours, we can get a rain and the soil can be wet, you know, a month later. It's amazing. So, you know, of course the top dries out, but down in there, it takes a lot to dry it out. So, and especially with the amount of rain that we've had this year.
So you get to do that enjoyable, spend the time on the road out, you know, hawking your wines?
I do not.
You don't?
No, my father and my husband do that. So I did that for 2 years back in the 90s. I can't say I enjoyed it much. So then I had babies and said, I got to stay home.
The best excuse.
Right.
I don't think I've heard that before.
So no, I do not really enjoy doing the going on the road part.
Well, it's good for you because in the end, you know, number one, being a mom and being a farmer, you can really, you know, teach your kids this idea of the value for the land. How old are your kids?
Absolutely. So my kids are 20 and 16. I am hopeful for the 16-year-old to find her way to being the third generation. She seems to be the most interested in that kid, has the palate to die for.
Wow, really?
I mean, she, from the time she was probably 7, 8, you know, she'd come in where we were tasting, you know, smell a wine, taste a wine, and start giving you descriptors, and it was pretty amazing.
Wow.
You know, so for her, it's inborn. I just hope that she can find the appreciation.
Yeah,
so,
that's a big deal.
Yeah,
but that's pretty
a
cool.
Big deal.
Well, I think every parent, just like your parents, wanted to see their kids take over.
Sure.
And in the end, if it doesn't happen, then you have to come up with plan B.
Right.
That can be pretty tough.
It can. You know, well, like I said, I mean, she's very interested in science. She's actually planning on doing a vineyard internship with my father this summer.
Wow.
He took her to Cal to show her around because he'd like to push her to go to school there. And they were just talking about it, and she's completely into it. So, you know, oh, great. That'd be fantastic.
Well, I sure wish I grew up here because I'd love to do
right.
it. Of course, the other thing too, you know, again, the romance of wine and that, but as a child who's of parents in the wine business, you're brought in to do some work so you may not necessarily want to do all the time. It is a very labor-intensive business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, again, I had folks asking me, when do we get to travel and when's the downtime? And there really isn't. When you're as small as we are and we are 9 people total, going everything from planting the grapes, running the vineyard, so we have 4 in the vineyard, 1 in the cellar, to making the wine, to selling the wine, we bottle it ourselves. So 9 people total, there's really no downtime because there's something going on in every part of that all the time. So, you know, maybe we get away for a day or two here and there, but for the most part, we're pretty busy all the time. So, but again, no complaints because look at where we get to live and what we get to do and enjoy wine. And who can complain about that?
Not me. I'm not going to complain.
Right.
Colleen, for our listeners who'd like to visit your tasting room, how would they find out about you online?
Yes. So we have a website, storybookwines.com. It does have a visit tab there. So we do everything by appointment, but love to have people come up. You know, take them out in the vineyard, show them the land, explain what we do, why we do it, and go into our very old caves and taste in there. And people love it. It's very exciting and different.
and to learn about what's cool about Calistoga.
That's right. That's right. And Zinfandel.
Well, on this rainy day, thank you very much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'd hope to come up to your tasting room sometime.
Absolutely. Love to have you.
Cheers.
Great. Thanks.
Learn more by visiting storybookwines.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.